There's just so much more to hear.
Download our podcasts at DubaiEye1038.com.
Hello and welcome to the Bite Size Business Breakfast, our daily podcast that brings together the very best bits of today's show from Tuesday, the 14th of January. Consumer complaints. They are soaring in Dubai. Let's find out why.
Wait. Did that waitress listen to a word I said? This steak is medium rare. I asked for it medium, and I wanted extra gravy on my mashed potatoes. Let me ask you something. How hard is your job? How intelligent do you have to be to take a food order?
Ma'am, you're absolutely right, and I apologize. I'm gonna get this fixed for you right away.
Good.
That is the movie Waiting, Ryle Reynolds, the poor waiter who was getting grief from a customer there. We're talking about complaining because new data from Dubai Economy, as we just mentioned, shows a 20% jump in complaints throughout the year in 2019, about 40,000. Brandy, you've had the back of an envelope out. How many is that per second, per minute, per week, per month?
I haven't quite broken it down that far, but I can tell you that with 3,259 complaints a month, that is around 800 a week, which would come in at about sort of 120, where are we? It would come in at about, do the maths for me. I've just lost my brain power.
40,000 a year.
It is. It is 39,000 a year. Who's doing the complaining, though? That's my question. We have a breakdown in numbers, and we know that Emirati consumers have made up around a quarter of all complainants in 2019. It's not a big surprise that complaints are rising for a couple of reasons. One of those is that there is more of a concerted effort from authorities to tell you how to complain. There's been a big publicity campaign around consumer rights awareness to make sure that people know the avenues that they can use and what they can use them for. And there's also been more of a focus of pushing us all to digital complaints, which again makes it easier to do so. And we all know what it's like. If something's easy, you're more likely to do it. Interestingly, speaking of digital, there was an increasing number of complaints around e-commerce, around digital transactions. That, to me, makes sense as well. Because if you think about it, buying stuff online, you've got a lot more that can go wrong in that process, potentially, than just buying it from a store where you've already touched, felt, smelt, whatever it is you're buying, and you're taking care of that last mile logistics yourself because you're the one taking it home. So it's not going to turn up late. It's not necessarily going to turn up damaged, or if you've dropped it, you're the one who's dropped it. So there's kind of more steps in the chain there that you could complain about.
Stephen has been in touch saying, yes, I made a complaint. It was a total waste of time. Maybe give us some more details of that, Stephen. Thanks very much indeed. Producer Milani here on the Business Breakfast team has done it several times. She has had some of hers resolved. So we're getting various different perspectives on this. If you have used this service, we'd love to get your thoughts. I did complain, it's about 3 or 4 years ago now, and it was something that we bought online, and it was the product that was delivered wasn't what we expected. We had a bit of a dispute, called up the DED as it was then, Dubai Department of Economic Development, and literally within an hour and a half it was resolved. But that was, I'm trying to think where we were living at the time, it's probably 5 years ago now, so it's not that relevant.
The department aims to get everything done within 4 working days. That's the time frame for dealing with complaints. Unsurprisingly, the largest share comes from services, and electronics comes in pretty close as a second. There's lots of reasons people complain. There's non-compliance with purchase terms. There's refund stuff, damages, problems with warranties, price mismatches, and all of the rest of it. I feel like I whinge a lot, but I don't make a formal complaint. Does that make me part of the problem or part of the solution?
Well, you have been whinging in the, not in the studio, in the off air over the past couple of weeks about A, your phone provider, and B, your bank, both of which are massive global / regional brands, aren't they?
But the thing is, I am what you think of as a hostage customer. Which, by the way, is the profile of customers that you never want to have. They're the people who don't necessarily leave because it's too much hassle, but they just badmouth you to everybody else.
Oh, dear.
So in the framework of customers, what you actually want is people who do formally complain, whether it's to you or whether it is to an ombudsman or third party, as the economic department's acting as here, because then you've got a chance to fix things. It's the silent but deadly people like me who spend their time just muttering about you all, I wouldn't go with them, that are the problem.
We've been speaking to someone responsible for addressing these issues. He's Ahmed Al-Zabi. He's the director of the Consumer Protection Department at Dubai's Department of Economic Development. And we asked him, why have we seen this 20% jump in complaints?
This increase, we believe that it's because the awareness increased among consumers. And of course, the business transaction happened in the market. Compared with the previous year, we lodged about 32,000 complaints, and we increase to 20% to reach almost 40,000 complaints, and as 63,000 inquiries and suggestions from consumers.
This is the Bite Size Business Breakfast, exclusively on DubaiEye1038.com.
60% surge in mortgage applications in the UAE last year. That's according to the guys at Mortgage Finder, part of the Property Finder real estate empire. Warren Filliskirk is the director of Mortgage Finder, and he's with us in the studio. So Brandon and I have been speculating about why we saw this upsurge in mortgage applications, but you can give us the real facts.
I think there's where we've reached a stage in the market where people that have been sort of sidelined for a few years, looking, waiting to see what's happened, have reached a level and conclusion that it's the right time. Value for money is there. And if you work out the numbers and buying is more favourable than renting, which is a big factor here, people are making the decision to move.
What are they buying? Are we talking about studios in international city or five-bedroom mansions on the Palm?
No, it's the you'll find the studio market is more for investing for people which are looking for a long-term return. It's the lower end of the market, it's the new lower end of the market, which 2 or 3 years ago was the middle end of the market. The way pricing has come down, value for money is there, and that's the sector that we're seeing the most activity in.
So what would be the average ticket price for a home loan in the UAE at the moment?
Up to sort of 1.2, 1.5 is where we're seeing the most activity in the market. In last year, we saw around the 700,000-800,000 dirham was really predominant from clients as well.
That was kind of the sweet spot.
Yes, yeah.
So in terms of 2020, what's going to happen this year? What's going to be the story of this year? More of the same, or do you see some new and different trends?
So far, it's the same. It's the same. It's the lower end of the spectrum that is moving, value for money, people making comparisons to what they're paying in their existing rental costs. There's a bit of a slowdown. I think we can see that end of the market now.
The
pricing, yes, absolutely. So we are seeing people move and make that final decision that we've been speaking to maybe 6-12 months. We've been answering questions for clients, and they've got to a point now where it's time to go.
That's interesting. A couple of things you've thrown up there. Do you think that the buying cycle itself is getting longer?
Absolutely. In the high end of that, I've been here 15 years in this, and it's at the peaks of the market where things are moving really quickly. It's a 4 week from start to finish. And now we can be working with clients for 6 months, 12 months before they actually finally commit or find the right property for them.
What would you put that down to? Are these people who normally wouldn't have been in the market and circumstances are making it possible? Is that why?
Absolutely. Value for money. It's human nature that people will maximise what they're looking to buy with the income and funds available they have. So people are pushing them to see what more they can get for their money. And in that transaction, that negotiation, that takes longer than it would do normally in otherwise.
We were also speculating this morning, how much was people buying to live and how much were people buying to become landlords themselves?
We are seeing, I would say, 70-80% of our business that we're doing is actual people looking to buy and live in the property themselves. From a mortgage perspective and the products available, it's limited to how far you can go. It's not open-ended like in other countries where it's based on rental incomes. It's still derived on your mainstream incomes in the main from banks. So you have a limit, a ceiling where you can get to. You can't just continue to add to your portfolio.
Warren, let's talk about higher end properties, the 5 million dirham plus yep. properties, which for much of the 15 years that you've been here have actually been the most active part of the Dubai real estate market. But you say not at the moment, and the mortgage situation or the home loan situation is part of the reason. Explain the problem with 5 million dirham plus properties, and then we can maybe knock about some potential solutions.
Sure. I mean, we're still seeing transactions because the value for money is the same with those properties compared to comparative prices from a few years ago, but it's on a much lesser scale than the lower price points. And it's also linked to developments coming online, certainly luxury developments. You know, there's a number of golf course developments that have come online, and people are, you know, as they arrive, people buy, people sell, people buy.
But you need whereas you need a 25% deposit for a house below 5 million, you need a 35% deposit for anything above 5 million.
That's,
and you
said
that's, if you throw in fees and blah, 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 it's getting on for half the value of any property over half a million. You've got to have knocking around, haven't you?
That's right. That's right. So that is, we feel, impinging the market in that sector at the moment. We'd like to see that change in the future when the powers that be make that decision. I think there would be an increase in activity and surge in that market because it makes a significant difference in the cash required for the transaction.
So in terms of, you mentioned the powers that be there, it's essentially the central bank that regulates this. There are various regulatory agencies. But when it comes to how much the banks can lend, as in any country, it's the central bank that tends to control that. Do we hear any mood music out of Abu Dhabi about what might happen? I mean, presumably if they're consulting the industry, property finder, mortgage finder now is a big player in this market, you will be one of the people they speak to.
It's really the central bank will discuss this internally with the leading banks rather than us as an independent brokerage. We've seen changes to the rules around equity release recently, just before the end of last year, whereby it's restricted for purely for the point of buying other property or to improve, renovate existing properties. We'd love to see changes to the loan to value actually in the higher end of the market. I think that would activate it. There's things that can be done now to increase and improve the market without becoming too risky with it. There's extra mortgage terms. You know, there's many countries that have 35-year mortgage terms. That decreases your costs. So that would encourage people to buy also.
I'm 47. Last time I took a mortgage out, I could only get about 15 or 16 years, yeah. Which is too darn old.
Well, that's right. If you're salaried, it's in the norm capped at 65 years of age in line with your visa. However, the central bank have removed those restrictions now and are now leaving it up to the individual banks to make that call on how long they wish to lend. Which is a step in the right direction.
20 seconds on interest rates, 3 cuts last year. Does that move the needle?
It makes it more affordable to allow more people to buy into the market because their money goes further.
Warren Phillisker, great talk to you. Appreciate you joining us. One of our top stories that we have seen a 60% increase in home loan applications throughout 2019. Warren Phillisker, Director Mortgage Finder. Thanks indeed.
You're welcome.
Catch up on the business headlines with the Bite-Sized Business Breakfast. The Business Breakfast's Pick of the Papers.
And joining us in the studio with a stack of tabloids and broadsheets under one arm and the ARN News Centre app under the other is Sanooj Sharif. I can't wait to talk to you about your favourite movie in a couple of moments' time. But the first order of business is the big story of the day, and that is the situation in the Philippines and flights to and from the UAE. What can you tell us?
Well, UAE carriers are resuming flights to Manila International Airport, which is trying to get services back to normal after suspending operations due to volcanic ash. And operations have been partially reinstated at the airport, but priority is going for departing flights. Now, Etihad Airways has reinstated flights EY-428 and 421, while Emirates Airline is also resuming its services, not just to Manila, but also to Clark and Cebu. But passengers are being urged to get in touch with the booking offices and contact centres to get the latest info.
Now, let's talk about the movies. You may remember, if you were listening at the back end of 2019, that Brandy and I were doing our best and worst of the year, business heroes and villains, favourite business deal. But we also did some pop culture stuff as well, our favourite movies. Yours was?
Mine was Once Upon a Time in Hollywood. excellent movie.
Mine, I think, was Star Wars, something like that, something trashy and pop culture-y. But Sunish Sharif was with us in the studio.
He raised the bar, didn't he?
Completely. Completely raised the bar, stratospherically so. What was, and we are going somewhere with this, what was your movie?
Mine was the South Korean film Parasite.
And the reason we're talking about it now is that it's picked up an Oscar nomination. Sunil Sharif is not the only person who thought this was a cracking movie. We'll get Sunil's thoughts on what's happened in a second, but first of all, have a listen to this. This is Bong Joon-ho. Well, who's he?
He's the director of the movie.
This is him talking to Jimmy Fallon, the late-night US talk show, about the eight-minute standing ovation that he got at the Cannes Film Festival.
Actually, the screening was very late night. It was almost midnight. And the 기립박수가 되게 길게 이어지는데 저랑 배우들이 다 되게 배가 고팠어요. 저녁을 제대로 못 먹어가지고.
So the standing ovation lasted very long, but the actors and I were very hungry because we couldn't eat dinner.
Brilliant stuff. He's become something of a celebrity in not just his native language. And while nominated for an Oscar, Brandy, the awards have already started pouring in, haven't they?
Yeah, the Golden Globes, very often seen as a precursor to the Oscars. And it did pick up Best Foreign Film.
So, Sunuj, just give us the 30-second version. What is this movie and why are you and many others raving about it?
It's a thriller. It's got black humor and it's basically a story about a small-time family of con artists trying to get involved with a wealthy family. Their paths cross and then, you know, these two families feeding off each other. It's kind of portrays the class divide, but in a completely different way. And, you know, it's the climax, the background music as well, all those elements coming together and the typical twist that South Korean movies have.
I have a theory.
Go on.
I have a theory that we're all getting more comfortable with foreign language films and subtitles because of Netflix.
Ah.
Because I'm now...
No for traficantes.
I'm now used to watching, exactly. I'm now used to watching drug cartels from South America with subtitles and lots of lovely Scandi noir and lots of other fantastic series, all with subtitles. And I think it's becoming a lot more normal. And people who wouldn't... No, I'm not throwing shade on you in the slightest, by the way, Sunuj. You are undoubtedly the most cultured person in this room at the moment. But people who would not normally have thought of going to see a foreign language film, you know, anything with subtitles, I think will do so now because subtitles have become normal.
It is, yeah. And I think, you know, even there's an element of newness to the latest Oscar nominations list because, you know, two Netflix movies bagging the nods and now this South Korean movie getting six nominations overall. It's the first South Korean movie to be nominated not just for the best Oscar, but also in the foreign language category. So, you know, big nominations.
Am I the only person drowning in Netflix content and not keeping up with the stuff I want to watch?
I mean, not enough hours in the day.
No.
But you have got a reserve flight to Mexico coming up soon. So there's a couple of box sets in
44
there.
44 hours of television.
Enough of your highbrow culture. I've been reading trashy tabloid royal gossip in the Daily Mail.
Of course you have.
Be to Harry and Meghan a symbol of unending love and faithfulness. Meghan, I give you this ring.
Meghan, I give you this ring.
As a sign of our marriage.
As a sign of our marriage.
Harry, I give you this ring.
Harry, I give you this ring.
As a sign of our marriage.
As a sign of our marriage.
All that I am, I give to you.
All that I am, I give to you.
And all that I have.
And all that I have.
I share with you.
I share with you.
This is the big summit at Sandringham yesterday, the schism in the British royal family. I love the headline in the Daily Mail. Inside the Megxit summit. This is Meghan's exit from the British royal family. What do we make of this? Is it just trashy tabloid gossip or does it raise interesting constitutional issues and is interesting business issues?
That would depend whether you think the monarchy is important or not.
Okay. You've been looking at the business implications, haven't you, very quickly?
I have, because there's been much made of how long this defection has been in the planning. And people have looked at the fact that the trademark Sussex Royal was applied for by the UK Patents Office quite a wee while ago, last June.
And that's because Meghan and Harry took the official title, the Duke and Duchess of Sussex, when they got married 18 months ago.
Exactly. And they applied, Beck and June, for Sussex Royal for a range of, oh gosh, everything from stationery to running emotional support groups. Two other people did that application for them, but it did pass into their name in December. Now they're having to look, though, that was just a UK trademark. They're having to look now at a global trademark because they already have a trademark squatter.
Oh, right. People are trying to steal that.
Someone in Europe has filed an application for Sussex Royal for a range of products, including toiletries, push-up lingerie, and lightly sparkling malted beverages.
Scented candles as well?
Possibly so.
On the way.
Just the highlights. This is the Bite Size Business Breakfast.
We're talking technology takeovers. Little fluffy clouds or big fluffy clouds, and that is because Cloudworks, Dubai-based tech company, has been taken over by a European competitor. Joining us in the studio is the founder and managing director of Cloudworks, Sufyan Akhlif. Sufyan, congratulations.
Thank you very much.
So tell us what has happened. This Brussels-based tech company has bought your company. Give us the details.
Yeah, so, in a strategy to expand their operation within the GCC and more broadly Asia, Nemakina has chosen to acquire Cloudworks, a cloud-based company in Dubai. And that will help eMakina Group to actually have an end-to-end solution for the customer in the region when it comes to digital transformation. So we're talking about business consulting, advisory, and technology and digital marketing.
So your company, Cloudworks, which you set up 4 years ago, does a lot of stuff in the field such as CRM and customer service projects. You've got some really big customers, the likes of MR, DP World. So you do that kind of thing for these really, really big organizations. Yeah. You've currently got about 30 staff. Mm-hmm. With an acquisition like this, what exactly is eMakina, this Brussels-based company, what is it buying?
Yeah, that's a great question. So actually for us, it's just going to the next level. We're talking about a group that has 1,000 plus employees all over the world, in United States, Europe, and now in GCC. And that would help us, complete our range of services, because we can really go with the customer today and have the strategy lined up with their KPIs and advise them into the digital transformation that they want to do, executing it in terms of technology and digital marketing.
So give me an example in simple terms that I might even be able to understand of an example of what you've done for a company here in Dubai or in this region, the problem that they had and how you helped to solve that problem.
Okay, so a great example would be a company that would have been quite successful through the years and have built a pretty decent size of salespeople or have a marketing department, but they have not been into putting together processes and having a streamlined way of working. So we come as Cloudworks and we use technology to help them track and have visibility on their activity. When now with eMakina, we come even more in advance into the cycle where we advise them and show them how they can perform even better with their strategy and what they want to achieve.
It must be said, your client list does read as a sort of a business who's who. You've got EMAR in there, yes, you've got DP World. Saudi Aramco hasn't been out of the headlines for the last couple of years. Tadawul, Virgin Megastore and others. What will this deal mean for them? What will it mean for your clients?
I think that we can finally serve them even better than just doing technology for them. We can actually really help them in their digital transformation. So it's not about only coming and implementing a system. Now it's walking into this journey with them with a large range of services, having access to 1,000 experts all around the world that can help us into this aspect.
Why has eMakina bought you? I mean, you're consulting in this space. They could easily come here and set up themselves. Yep. I say easily in inverted commas. Yep. Why haven't they moved into this market? Why have they chosen acquisition?
Well, Imakina wanted to, you know, coming into this fast-growing market, which is the GCC and in a more broader way, Asia, to serve locally the customer. And the fastest way to doing it was to acquire a specialist into the region so that they can grow their team quite efficiently, because they have a very high focus on locally serving their customers. So they didn't want to take the time of setting up a team from scratch. I think that we had a very good synergy and we complement each other in terms of companies.
Well, you've managed to do what we here on the Business Breakfast, we christen the Dubai dream.
Yeah.
Build something.
Yeah.
And sell it to an international player with deep pockets. And you've managed to do that in just 4 years. What advice would you give other startups in that regard?
Well, I strongly believe, to take your word, that Dubai is a good place to dream. First of all, I think that we are really in a market with a lot of opportunities. And I would suggest to people really what we've done was pretty simple. We took our passion, we worked hard, and we went to the right place to set up our company. And with all the investment being done by this country, and most parts of the GCC as well, we have Expo 2020, we have the Vision 2030 of Saudi. You just have to work hard and follow your passion, do something that you like. Until you make it.
But what insight can you give us into the meetings that you've had with Imakina? In your story that secured this deal?
I think it's really about the success that you had and the vision that you have as well. It was a lot about alignment. We find ourselves to be the perfect match for Imakina because we had the same vision. They have a very high entrepreneurship philosophy within the company, and that works pretty well for us. So I would say during the discussion, one of the major aspects was this alignment on what we wanted to do and what we were offering in terms of services.
Okay, Sufyan, before we let you go, we've got to ask you the money question. And broadly speaking, this is how it works when a company gets taken over. I ask you how much they paid.
Yeah.
You tell me, I can't tell you because of the confidentiality clause. Then Brandy holds you down and then I hold a candle to your toes until you give us something.
Yeah.
So what can you tell us about the dollars and cents?
I'm super happy to be here. So what I can tell you is invite me in 2024 and I'll be happy.
That's a new one.
Yeah, and it's because we have a partnership. So as you might read maybe in some places, there are going to be an earnout for the next years. And we know the final value in actually 2024. So I'll be happy to speak with you.
But are we talking, a six-figure deal, seven-figure deal? What are we talking?
We're talking about, a large-figure deal.
Mabruk, Sufyan. We're delighted for you. Sufyan Akhlif is the founder and managing director of Cloudworks, just been taken over by a European company. Appreciate your time.
Thank you very much.
You better get going because the hard work starts now, doesn't it?
No, thank you very much.
Thanks very much indeed for listening. We're back tomorrow morning live on air with the Business Breakfast. Breakfast at 6 a.m.
There's just so much more to hear.
Download our podcast at DubaiEye1038.com.